Failure is not an option.
What difference at this point does it make?
Nobody said it was going to be fun.
This is Real Talk, a fearless, poignant, and intrepid show where truth speaks louder than words. This is Real Talk with your host, Audrey Russo.
The shame, not of this world, so we live on the run. We keep our eyes set, on what is to come.
It happened before. It will happen again. It's just a question of when.
Time's a luxury we don't have.
Howdy. I am Lieutenant Colonel retired Alan West, President and CEO of the National Center for Policy Analysis and former member of the United States Congress. And you are listening to Audrey Russo, my dear friend, on Real Talk Radio. Listen up, or else I'll drop you for push-ups. Thank you.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, this is Audrey Russo, and you're listening to Real Talk. Well, there's more U.S.-led peace talks on the way, and they're about to begin in Geneva, but some of the players are not behaving, and we're going to discuss that with my next guest. For my new listeners, U.S. Army retired Lieutenant Colonel Sarja Sangari is CEO of the Near East Center for Strategic Engagement, LLC. He's had 6 years of continuous combat deployment in the Middle East. Sargis has conducted 144 combat patrols, 22 special forces missions, and survived 7 IED attacks, and has served 20 years in our U.S. military. It's my great pleasure to give a Real Talk welcome back to Lieutenant Colonel Sargis Sangari. Happy New Year, and welcome back, Sargis.
Happy New Year to you, too, Audrey. Much appreciated. Hopefully you have a great New Year this year.
Yes, we're looking forward to that, we hope. And it's great to have you back with us. And, well, I'm going to jump right into the Sargis. I understand that another, as I mentioned in the intro, U.S.-led peace talk is about to take place in Geneva. Can you share with us who the players are involved in this meeting?
Well, it is U.S.-led peace talks. Major players are really the players that are currently in the region. As you know, Saudi recently pulled our ambassadors. Kuwait followed suit today by doing so. So the Sunni and the Shia, based on the attack that took place against the Saudi embassy in Iran, are starting to draw the lines as far as where their loyalties fall.
Well,
and that being the case,
a lot of the individuals
that are initially that we need to bring to the peace table.
I just want to interrupt you for a second. So the listeners know, why did they pull their ambassador?
Okay. Yes, they pulled their ambassador because the Saudi embassy was recently attacked in Tehran. So Saudi retaliated by pulling their ambassador. Now, what led to the initial attack against the embassy in Iran, the Saudi embassy, was because there was an execution of a Shia cleric. Now, to be honest, over the past 5 years, Saudi has executed multiple Shia leaders in Saudi, and Iran has executed multiple Sunnis in Iran. The reason why it became such a critical issue now is tied to two things. One is the driver in the area's economy of the oil, because there was a meeting at the OPEC in December, and there was no decisions made whether or not they were going to go ahead and try to either cut OPEC productions or put a cap on them. That being the case, part of what is happening in the region right now with the execution of the Shia cleric has a lot to do with the oil negotiations and the economy of the two countries and how oil is being used within the region for political control. The other piece is with the Geneva Convention meeting that is about to take place, and the fact that you have Saudi, who has a group that they're trying to represent, which are the fighters are fighting currently against Assad's regime, and Turkey having their group that they're also trying to represent, who are fighting at the Assad regime in Syria. It was a leverage point for trying to set the stage for negotiations that are taking place in Geneva. The unfortunate piece in the process is that U.S. will end up losing if any of these major players decide not to show up. So literally for 3 years, the State Department, John Kerry, President Obama have been pushing to get to this stage, and if Saudi doesn't show up, which is a possible indication now, that means it's a failure of foreign policy on behalf of President Obama and John Kerry and what the political appointees within the State Department were trying to achieve.
Yeah, gee, what a surprise, a foreign policy failure of the Obama administration? I'm being sarcastic, of course. So it is possible then that this little spat, so to speak, between Iran and the Saudis could actually affect the talks going forward.
Correct. It's possible that Saudi may decide not to show up. If that happens, really, the major winner would be Russia.
Really?
Russia would love to see U.S. foreign policy failure in the region, because what it does, it now allows Russia to step in and reengage in the region and try to bring these actors to a new table. And, of course, again, we go back to the whole understanding. You have to have forces on the ground. Right now, the only people who have forces on the ground are the Russians. They have three air bases. They have 1,000-plus soldiers in each air base. They have their, finally, what they've been trying to achieve foreign policy-wise since the Tsar Alexander was in Russia, was to try to get out of the Black Sea and get themselves a warm water port and an access out. Since Tsar Russia, they have been able to finally accomplish that foreign policy objective. And I think that's one of the things that, from an American perspective, we lose touch on is the fact that Russia has had one single foreign policy objective, geographically get out of the Black Sea, and they have been able to achieve it after 100 years. U.S. foreign policy changes constantly. Almost every 4 years it might change, regardless if it's a Democratic followed by a Democratic administration or Republican following a Democratic administration. Because of that, Russia will win in the region. U.S. foreign policy will fail. Russia has forces on the ground, so it forces Saudi to come to the table. The only reason that Saudi recently had decided to actually support some of the Russian needs and desires in the region was because Russia expanded their footprint with their ally Iran in Syria by holding the various different natural gas pipelines and oil pipelines that initially had ISIS fighters sitting on them. And these ISIS fighters were loyal to Saudi. Once Saudi lost that footprint in the region, they were forced to have to negotiate. Now you're in a position where, because of what has happened between Saudi and Iran, if Saudi decides not to come to the negotiation tables, U.S. foreign policy takes a final hit, and Russia has already started to expand its influence even in Iraq. concluded establishing a joint intelligence sharing base in Iraq, which Saudi has participated in reluctantly, but they have to because of the fact that Russia is sitting in Syria currently.
Hmm. This is interesting that Russia, you know, they just seem to be benefiting everywhere lately. But this, it's there. They must be savoring the fact that, of course, as you mentioned earlier, it's nothing new that between Iran and the Saudis, because it's a Sunni Shia battle. So I'm wondering if he knew something was going to happen, because he's looking forward to another failure for us. Now, you mentioned that, of course, we're going to lose in this, and this administration has no intention of changing their intentions here. For another, let's say a Republican gets in, which we hope, what do they have ahead of themselves in the region, especially concerning Syria? Is it possible that we can turn it around?
I don't think it's possible. Given how you're moving forward currently, I will tell you, even if Hillary Clinton wins, let's say stays in, she becomes a nominee and she wins, she's not going to be able to achieve success the way it's set up right now.
Wow.
Russia is on the ground. They're in Syria. They're going to protect their interests, period. They have achieved what they were trying to achieve in 100 years for their foreign policy.
So they're not moving. They're not going to move.
They're not moving. They're actually starting to expand into northern Iraq. That means possibly, from our indications, is that 3 more months, if U.S. doesn't change its policy within the region, it's possible that they'll probably have enough influence in northern Iraq that you'll even see your closest allies, which are right now the Kurds, as Congress believes and the State Department, start moving towards the Russians. The Russians have already pledged support for the YPG, which is Kurdish in itself, and they have promised that they will support them with their own location in Syria. They have pledged support for the PKK, which are Kurds in western Turkey, pretty much. Mm. And, you know, right now you're looking almost at a internal fight that there's going to be a war between Turkey and the PKK for possibly 2 more years to come, where Russia will support the PKK with equipment, weapon, and training to hold their ground. The next person that they have to bring on board would be the KRG, Kurdish Regional Government. And KRG has traditionally had a long-standing relationship with the Russians, maybe not the KRG itself, but the KRG leaderships are currently in the leadership positions. This is way before United States ever entered into Iraq. And they have even started courting other minorities and groups, to include inviting their various different political organizations throughout the world for meetings in Russia. So Russia is expanding there. Russia is already sitting in Baghdad with a joint intelligence sharing base. And if Russia is able to get its hands on Iraq and take it away from a U.S. Basing area, then you're going to see a time where we're going to go back to how it was before the 80s, where Russia had a relationship with Iraq, Syria, and they were in Afghanistan. And as you know, they're already negotiating there. There is an out for the U.S., but the U.S. has to be willing to make some hard decisions. And one of the hardest decisions it has to make is to finally be able to find friends in the region that it can trust. You cannot work with individuals who are willing to work both sides of the fence. As an example, look at the Saudi peace. Saudi and Iran now are at odds against each other. What that does, it actually boosts up the oil prices per barrel. Mm. Mm. So who does that help? Also, it helps Russia at the same time. So there's a possibility that with the current crisis, all three of them benefit. If oil stays about a certain price, Russia benefits. Russia is already starting to buy all the oil barrels that are on the market, because the market has been flooded, and they're buying them now from Saudi to try to keep the stock for their future needs. Iran will benefit because oil prices will be high, and Saudi. If Saudi decides not to come to the negotiation tables in Geneva, U.S. foreign policy is just done in the region. Now, given what is happening currently, if U.S. is able to convince Saudi to stay on the stay in the coalition and is able to convince his Gulf neighbors to stay in the coalition, and there's any sanctions against Iran, that allows now for Iran to take a step back. It allows U.S. to again surge forward with its political gains in the region, and it will probably allow U.S. to be able to make sure that Russia can move out of the region over the next 6 months. However, that's a commitment you have to make. We don't know if the leadership currently has made a decision to basically turn everything over to the Russians in that region, or they seriously want to stay there and fight for a enduring footprint. If you don't do it now, whoever comes after you, it's going to cost them more money, more power, more lives sacrificed to be able to get those relationships back.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, this really is, I hate to say it, it's a sad thing to say, that it's really no surprise considering what this administration has been doing, the disasters they've committed in foreign policy. So we just, I'm glad you're keeping an eye on this. And so just the commander of the Syrian Christian Army, Emmanuel Kashaba, was kind enough, thanks to you, to be with us, recently on the show. I'm just curious, has there been any progress in the U.S. government aiding the Assyrian Christian Army since then?
There's a want to help, but that want has to translate through system processes. I agree, a reality is Congress can make things legal or illegal. Right now, the current Congress is really good for 2 years. The first session of Congress is done for the 144th. The next session, if something doesn't happen in this session, I just don't see how anything is going to change in the region. And one of the reasons why we've been taking a hit foreign policy-wise, because the U.S. really doesn't have consistent, long, enduring foreign policies to try to pursue. Even if you listen to Hillary Clinton, who's on the campaign stomp, she even doesn't agree with everything that President Obama has done. You cannot succeed in a region where President Bush builds a foreign policy, President Obama comes in and destroys it completely. Then President Obama builds his foreign policy, and even members of his own staff come in and say, well, we're going to destroy it, and we're going to go or head in a different direction. The people in the region won't trust you. Countries will not trust you. Geographically, Russia is always closer to them. What ends up happening with your foreign policy, you give money to buy friends in the region, basically, and you get formal T-cells, in which they use to kill each other. That's not a foreign policy. You want an enduring foreign policy, you have to be able to find guys like the Assyrians on the ground, Yazidis who are suffering on the ground, and others in order to be able to have enduring partnership in the region. And for a small amount of training and support, you'll be able to achieve success tactically and operationally within the region. So right now, we're pushing for equipment support. That's all we've asked for. We haven't asked for money. We said, give us equipment support. And we're at that stage. So we'll see if Congress finally supports us in that process.
Mm-hmm. Your last time in Washington, were you able to gain any favor with any individuals in Congress to the cause?
Well, what we did, we went through the system process. We talked to individuals at state, individuals at the Department of Defense, the individuals had to be talked to. We've talked to various different committees, and these discussions that have taken place were to set the stage to get to a point where we are now. Now it's a matter of, now that the staffs are aware of what was going on, what has gone on, what the requirements and needs are, now it's a matter of going to the leadership and saying, okay, guys, gentlemen, here, ladies, here's where we're at. We just need you to provide support and we need you to be able to provide the training necessary for us to move this thing forward to bring enduring peace in the region. Look how bad the region is, Audrey. I mean, recently with the shooting that took place in Israel, you know, the gentleman who shot up the local bar in Israel, they don't want to say that he's an ISIS member. We're at a point where Israeli security is so bad that they rather have the blame be put on a Palestinian than a member of ISIS. Because if ISIS is ever successful on conducting a terrorist act on the soil in Israel, all these groups, Hamas, Palestinian organization, all these groups that have never been able to achieve anything in the region would be wiped out. And the one thing that Islamic radicals will always rally around is the flag of hatred of Israel.
Yeah.
Our biggest ally in the region is at a point where they rather have their citizens, I hate to say it, be cut to pieces by individual Palestinians rather than being able to be cut into pieces by ISIS, because they understand the enormous responsibility of being able to protect against this type of a monstrosity. And now you have the Syrians who are in the plane with no support, no training, trying to do that on their own. Is there a Christian genocide taking place? And we just got to support them to give them opportunity to take the fight and alleviate the pressure off of all our other allies in the region, whoever they may be.
Yes, yes. We're getting a little short on time, but can we just take 2 minutes here? Would you be kind enough to explain the United Assyrian Appeal to the listeners, for the new listeners?
We started the UnitedAssyrianAppeal.org last March when we knew that there was no support coming in. So the money that comes in to UnitedAssyrianAppeal.org goes directly to supporting the military families of the Syrian fighters who are fighting on the battlefield. So if I could take care of the family members, then the those individuals can fight. And one thing I would say, thanks to Michael Savage recently, we were able to raise $50,000 for the Syrian military families. That's going to sustain us through the first quarter of this entire year, and it allows us to put more bodies on the battlefield to protect the forward line of troops, which the Syrian military has been holding since August 11th of 2014.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah, and thanks to Michael Savage. That's fabulous. Now, Sarge, just quickly, where can the listeners follow and support your excellent work?
They could go to the Near East Center for Strategic Engagement. We're on Twitter, and we have a Facebook, and, of course, our blog site. And to read about what we have predicted, our predictions for 2016 is probably a war between Turkey and Iran and Egypt possibly entering into the war in Syria. So those are big highlights in the next 3 months. But unfortunately, Audrey, is going to be a bloody 2016. Mm-hmm. It's going to be probably the worst ever been in the region.
Oh, gosh. We pray not. But I will have all that information so you could follow this, listeners, carefully, because Sarge just constantly keeps his site updated, constantly writing, and lets you know what's going on. So I'll have that information in my social media and all in my after show. Thanks so much, Sarge, for sharing your assessments on these critical issues. We look forward to your return to the show. And until then, may God bless you, your work, the Christians under Muslim persecution, and may God save America. Bye for now.